and welcome to a live episode here of Strong Style on a beautiful Friday afternoon here in Los Angeles. Whatever you're at, I hope it's going well. And I don't know what time, maybe from a Monday morning or afternoon when you're watching this. I hope you are in a good place and enjoying the weather out there. And anybody who's been experiencing some of the weather we've been seeing around the country, I hope you all are taking care and being safe. I am the Outlaw John Rocha. I am one of your co-hosts on the show. And over there, I'm joined by my man, Aaron Turner, down there in Orlando. How are you feeling, brother?
Good. No beard. No beard anymore. It's gone. I'm no longer looking like a homeless person. I decided to shave the beard. It is gone. The beard is no longer here.
The beard is gone. That's awesome, man. We got so much to cover, man, overall this week. A pretty full week of wrestling news. Certainly the Matt Hardy update. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into Rusev joining the AEW. Vince being upset about his independent contractors acting independently. How interesting. And we're going to also touch on or revisit the great match between Kazuchika Okada and Kenny Omega from NJPW Dominion 2018, June 2018. Incredible 2 out of 3 falls match, an hour-long match that was fascinating to watch and certainly a thrill to see some of the incredible moves being done by these guys, Aaron. What do you want to jump in first, or do you have anything you want to say before we start?
No, I don't have anything I want to say for the start, but just I want to preface this whole episode with I'm going to be bitter today. I'm going to be in rare form today because of the stories that have upset me this week. Wow. People from the Outlaw Nation Network have come for me.
What?
Oh, that's right. It happened.
What happened? Talk to me about it. What's going on? Are you going to bring it up? Really.
Jay Washington and I had a back and forth, but it's nothing. It was nothing. It's nothing at all.
Let me ask, did Jay tweet something and then you responded?
No. I believe
Haskell. Or did you tweet something and Jay responded?
No, Haskell tweeted something that had both me and Jay in it. Then I responded and then Jay took exception to what I said. We had a little bit of a back and forth. Was it a big deal? No hurt feelings. Nobody got blocked. It wasn't that bad.
Okay. I know to stay away from Haskell's tweets. He likes to stir it up. And no offense to you, Haskell, if you're watching, Haskell loves to stir it up. He enjoys being the center of drama. So I usually stay away from it. Even though he supports everything we do here in the Schmodown world and the world of the Outlaw Nation, which I thoroughly thank him for and appreciate, I do know he likes to be a little bit of a shit stirrer. So I usually stay out of it. I got enough drama going on in real life to not have to get into it on social media. And I'm on a 3-game losing streak when it comes to the Schmodown. So people are coming for me too. And, saying I should retire and, I should hang it up. I got 3 L's. Even though I've lost to 2 of the best players that I've ever played, or 3 of the best players I've ever played, and then a new kid coming in who I think is going to shock the world in that tournament. So whatever, they can suck it. Let's jump on to whatever you want to talk about, Aaron. What's the first news item we got?
Oh, man, if 3 losses it gets you out, then LeBron James and the Cavs should have quit a long time ago. the Red Sox would have never beat the Yankees in that world, or the ALCS a few years ago. I mean, I digress. But anyway, so let's start with this. If you caught All Out this past weekend, you probably caught the match between Sammy Guevara and Matt Hardy, which was a pretty good match. Pretty good pay-per-view overall. Kind of bypassed that. I had a lot of fun with it. But
do you want to talk about that at all, or what you felt about it, or you want to talk about it a little bit later?
The only thing I want to briefly talk about is that I was wrong about the Casino Battle Royal, as Ricky Starks did not win. It was Lance Archer that won, which is okay, I guess. And then Kenny Omega and Hangman Page lost the titles, as I kind of predicted. And it looks like we're going to be getting heel Kenny Omega, which is something we've been needing to do for a long time. So I'm very excited about that. Pretty good show overall. But Matt Hardy and Sammy Guevara do this spot on a cherry picker or a scissor lift where there's a table underneath, and they overshot the table, and Matt Hardy's head goes bam, smacks against the concrete, and you can tell that he's out of it for a minute.
Yeah.
Very, very look. Look at the look on his face.
Yeah.
Look at that. Good picture there. Very, very interesting spot that happened there. And Tony Khan said that he didn't have a concussion. Matt Hardy's wife, Rebby, said, "How do you not have a concussion after something like that?" That Matt was not responding to her in normal fashion.
Yeah.
So, and then he goes on to the hospital. Tony Khan comes out the next day. The owner of AEW says He doesn't have a concussion. He didn't have a concussion. Matt goes on Dynamite this week, is taking some time off to recover and heal. So we're getting conflicting reports that he was concussed. He wasn't concussed. He was hurt. He wasn't hurt. Don't really know what the deal is. I know that if you do something like that, if you have some kind of head injury, you should probably take the precaution, which is what AEW has definitely done here.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this.
Sure.
At Matt Hardy's age, and I don't mean to make an ageist comment, but no, he's not a spring chicken. Let's be honest.
It's not ageist. Look, Shaq said it very famously. 39 ain't 29, bro. And that's the truth. You know, your body changes, your body's ability to endure or handle the pain that comes in with wrestling, especially as you get into the hardcore aspects of it. Certainly Terry Funk is one of those anomalies that was able to take tacks and fire and glasses and bricks and all kind boards and all kendo sticks, concrete, all of it. He's one of these guys that just was able to do it for a very long time before he finally stopped. But it was really uncomfortable how far he was going. Hell, Ric Flair was still bladed into his 60s in some of these matches. So these guys understand that they're lifers. And look, Matt Hardy was on his way. I'd like to liken Matt Hardy to like a guy who was really famous for about 4 to 5 years. He was a lead actor. And then the fans' taste kind of changed. And he was like, you know, trying to find his way. Had the Lita issue. Yeah, Jeff Hardy was outshining him for a large part of the tail end of that time in WWE. And eventually Matt goes to other places. And then Matt gets reborn, literally doing the delete stuff, which was so incredible. And he did it on his own. Came up with it. And so all credit to Matt Hardy for doing what a lot of wrestlers are not able to do, come up with a brilliant gimmick, change the perception of Matt Hardy, and make himself the alpha again of the Hardys. And he has stayed in that position through this latter half of his career. So that's the way I look at it. It's like he was a star for a little while, then kind of disappeared doing direct-to-DVD movies, and then he's popped back up again, reborn, maybe being put in a Quentin Tarantino movie. He's reborn. And now in this situation, at his age, he doesn't want to lose the status that he's at. Matt Hardy is now officially a legend. And a legend, but for so many reasons, right? You can still keep doing it. But putting himself in this situation, at this risk, with a concussion, with concrete to the head, I mean, taking some time off to recover is great. But they should have never finished that match. And I was really left with a shocked reaction afterwards, Aaron, because Cody Rhodes built AEW to be the anti-WWE, the anti-Vince. And by that, I mean wrestlers come first. Wrestlers' health comes first. Wrestlers' priorities come first. And he has talked about that in numerous interviews. And here's the first big moment that he has to prove that. And he doesn't prove that. And I think that's a big mark on AEW. No matter how many shows they do or they try to PR spin this thing, this looks bad on Tony Khan and on Cody Rhodes for allowing Matt to continue. A wrestler is going to always want to continue. Matt should never have gone back into that ring for the rest of the match.
Well, Matt Hardy's also, you know, 45. Let's put that out there. That's not young in wrestling terms. Also, there's just an old adage, which I guess can become an adage for anyone.
Yeah.
A head or a skull versus concrete. Concrete's going to win every single time.
Yep.
I know this because my wife's grandfather had a head injury that unfortunately ended his life. My father had a head injury, which started the decline of his life. It's serious stuff. Like it's not a joke. And for a guy like Matt Hardy to go in there,
yeah,
and we're just going to continue. Like, all that we know about CTE now and concussions, especially in WWE, they had that big concussion lawsuit, which got dismissed this week. This whole thing, you're going to put him at risk. I don't care what the doctor said. Like, I don't care what your paid doctor said, that he was okay. Yeah. You can't let him go back in there. Like, you just call it, and that's it.
NFL players don't go through the concussion protocol at the speed that Matt Hardy went through the concussion protocol at AEW All Out. Like, that's the thing you have to think about. And those guys aren't getting hit or aren't banging into concrete. They're wearing protective gear around their face, around their bodies to minimize the hit. Something like that from that high up, no way you're through the protocol that quickly. And that's an issue as well. I totally agree with you, Aaron. It's a little bit troubling to see that. And you're just like, well, he is 45, but he's 45 in wrestling years. And that's like 55 or 60 in normal human years, because the amount of battering your body has taken and your head has taken through the years of professional wrestling. And yeah, you mentioned that lawsuit. I was incredibly mad about that lawsuit, brother. It's a very frustrating situation. A lot of these older wrestlers, it's incredible how they treat them like absolute dog crap. These guys that built the foundation that Vince is walking on now, the new wrestlers are walking on now. It's like the NFL. These rich guys, they start these companies and they play stupid when it's convenient. And, you know, it's not like head injuries was something they just discovered like in 2015. Head injuries have been around since the 50s, you know, 40s, 50s, this idea of head injuries and what they can do to people. And it's surprising to me that they're willing to not pay these guys any kind of money for their physical pain, for the stuff that they endured. Some of the greats, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff was in that lawsuit. So many people are in that lawsuit with incredible, you know, incredible legacies in the history of professional wrestling, just got dismissed. And here's Matt Hardy doing something like this that could affect him down the road. You know, the CTE stuff with the football players, they're starting to find it in wrestlers very, very significantly as well. And his wife tweeting was a wife tweeting about the, because she loves her husband. And the fact that he wasn't responding to any of her tweets, and then her calling out AEW is absolutely correct, man. I loved that she called them out. Too many family members are scared to speak out because there's that, you know, code in wrestling. And I love that she spoke out to put them on blast for what they did.
Well, Rebby Hardy is one that is definitely not afraid to talk about any wrestling company. It doesn't matter who. She's not afraid to speak her mind. And she's gotten into trouble for that a little bit. And she did put up the concussion tweets, ended up getting deleted by her. So I don't know if that was like an AEW or a Matt thing, like saying, hey, calm down, chill.
Probably a Matt thing.
Probably. But as someone mentioned it in the chat, the table should have been a little further back. Table's a little small. Yeah. Yeah. Both of those things. It was a small table. Could have been two tables, would have been nice.
Yeah.
If you're going to do something like that. But yeah, you just don't know. You're coming off a cherry picker, gravity. You know, all kinds of math and science go into that that I'm not privy to. So it's just bad idea to fall onto concrete without a crash pad. I know people say, oh, good, a crash pad. That's for wimps. Not when you're 45 years old. it's not. We need it. So
fans sitting on the sideline talking smack who've never done it is always comical to me on so many levels. They could fall off a stair and start crying like babies. He's taking a bump off a 10 to 12 foot height onto concrete. That's insane. Christian Rommel says, I was half drunk off Terramana and sobered up real quick when I saw that happen. Good God, my friends got quiet too. Yeah, this is not Shane falling 75 feet into a crash pad, so to speak. It was the same feeling you felt, I think, afterwards with the Mick Foley situation. You were shocked when it happened, of course. But then him keeping going kind of, in your mind at that time, you know, turned him into a legend. But with this and what we know about the physical body, what can happen with his head injuries, Aaron, is completely incorrect for AEW. And they can spin it however they want. I wish they'd just say, we fucked up. We're sorry. It won't happen again. We're going to institute stronger protocols so our professional wrestlers do not dictate when they can re-enter the match. And we're happy to take the hit financially and take the hit storyline-wise as well, because that's the risk inherent in professional wrestling. When you schedule a move like that, or what do you want to call it? Or you plan a move like that in a match and get it approved, you run the risk of either one of those wrestlers being injured in that situation. And then you as the company must assume that risk that you might lose them for an extended period of time, or you might lose, it might mess up your storyline. So if you approve that move, you have to also approve the possible consequences of that move. And I don't see a lot of wrestling companies that do that. And it really infuriates me, man.
You know, Matt Hardy's been having a really bad month. Like he debuts in AEW to no crowd. That's when there was no crowd whatsoever because of COVID.
Yeah.
And then he gets hit in the head with a chair because Sammy Guevara allegedly threw the wrong chair at his head.
Right.
And it busted him open for real. Yeah. So he had that nasty gash on his head. And then this happens. It's like, man, Matt Hardy's kind of snake bit in AEW. I hope he gets to turn it around.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes the signs are there, like neon signs telling you to get out of situations. Sometimes the signs are there to test how much you really want to stay in this situation. And we won't know until he keeps going with this, which one those signs really were, or which sign, what those signs really meant until a little bit later on in his career there at AEW. But yeah, strange situation for him. Do we have any more information on him in terms of his condition? He's just going to recover for a while. Have they said how long he's going to be out at all?
No, they haven't said he's just going to take some time off to recover. He was, they did, or he did post a picture the other day of him doing that, what do they call it? Mm-hmm. That cup therapy, like where they, it's got a name. I forget.
Oh, what cupping. You mean the cupping stuff.
You're doing the cupping stuff. Yeah, yeah, he's doing that for his neck and stuff. So
yep.
He did show that. So I guess he's doing some holistic kind of treatments to try to get the neck under control. But yeah, it looked, the funny thing, if there is a funny thing about this, his wife in the crowd, they showed her in the crowd on Dynamite, like watching Matt Hardy talk. And it, you could just see, like, without, with her having a mask on, you could see with her eyes that Matt, you're coming home no matter what, and they better let you just get off TV because I'm not going to stand for it. Like, you could tell she was ready to rage on somebody.
Don't mess with
Dana. No, definitely not. And yeah, you don't want a shoe to the back of your head. I'm just saying, like, it's not a good idea. But she was ready to fight. So
she was. I love that. Hey, man. Once you get a Lady Latina, she is ride or die for you, man. And she will go. I mean, she probably would have taken out half the locker room if they had let her, man. You don't want to let that. You don't want to be in a bad situation on the other side of that, for sure. Let me tell you. We do. What about the what about the Matt Sydal stuff? That was a little scary, too. That slip looked, that could have been, dude, he could have snapped his neck off that rope, Aaron. It was scary, that slip.
Yeah, but the good thing about Matt Sydal is that, or Matt Sydal, I don't know how you say it, Matt Sydal, for the former Evan Bourne. Yeah, when he slipped off of that rope, he was very close to cracking his neck on that top rope. That could have been very ugly, but he's made the best out of it. He's just kind of like, hey, guys, I heard from AEW that if I get to have a match again, there's no banana peels allowed. So it's just kind of stuff like that where you kind of take it in stride. Like, since he didn't get hurt, I feel like it's kind of okay to poke fun out of him a little bit because it's just something that happens. Like, just one of those weird botches. But, you know, as long as he didn't get hurt, no harm, no foul, it's okay.
Do you feel that AEW comes away from this pay-per-view a better a company or a lesser company?
I mean,
or kind of equal.
AEW Dynamite just did 1 million viewers for the first time ever since they've started, which is huge. It's really a huge number for them. Mm-hmm. It's bigger than NXT's ever had. So it's kind of like, you know, a lot of people wanted to see the fallout from that All Out pay-per-view. And it just seems like it's going to be growing and growing and growing. A lot of people have complained that, oh, they're bringing in past WWE stars. And we'll talk about that later. But it's just, it's, even for me as a fan, like I'm very pro NXT. I don't hide that very well. But I have been watching, I gotta say, I've been watching a lot more AEW Dynamite live lately and catching NXT later. It used to be the other way around, but I kind of want to see what they're gonna do with Dynamite, see if they could hook me and bring me in. Mm-hmm. And so far they have. Like I know most of the people on their roster, not everybody,
right?
But I'm invested in some of their characters and some of the people they want to put time in.
Yeah.
So right now, AEW's doing pretty well in my eyes.
Cool. All right. What do we we got some Streamlabs that come through and a super chat that's come through. We had a Streamlab from Hill Nellums. He donated. And ladies and gentlemen, please, the Streamlabs and super chats are up. Please send your questions and send your thoughts in. You know, it's a special early live episode. You know, the Streamlabs and super chats keep all the lights on here in the Outlaw Nation, keep us doing these shows and all the content we bring to you. So any love you can give us on a Friday, kind of send us into the weekend in a good place, we'd really appreciate. Hill Nellums, thank you so much for the awesome donation. He said, that Matt Hardy shit at All Out was infuriating. Took me out of the rest of the pay-per-view. So I couldn't even tell if the rest of the show was good. No way that match should have been restarted. Knowing what we know, protect wrestlers from themselves. Yeah, everything we've said here, Aaron, but even more so. I mean, this is very reminiscent of the Owen Hart situation where they just keep going. I know Matt didn't pass away, obviously, but Owen did, and Vince kept going. So it's that, it's 20 years, 30 years later, and we're still doing the same shit, bro.
That's a good point about the Owen Hart thing. And I'm sorry to hear that, Hill, that you couldn't enjoy the rest of the show. Yeah. I know a few people that were like that too, that said, you know what, this is BS. Like, screw this. I'm not watching it. Yeah. I get it. I totally get it. You did miss some good stuff. I will say that you did miss some good stuff that actually did happen.
Yeah.
But to see somebody like Matt Hardy, that's like, you're like a beloved person, a legend, like you said, at this point, yeah, man, it's just, it's hard to watch. It's stupid.
Yeah.
It's like the guy that, you know, breaks his leg and is like, ah, throw, rub some dirt on it. Yeah. It's not that mentality anymore, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's 2020. That's not how that works anymore.
Right.
Like you don't have Joe Theismann break his leg, get turned inside out and say, yeah, Joe, just, you know, tape it up and get back in there. You don't,
yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
Right.
It doesn't work that way anymore.
Well, the athletes are way more powerful than they used to be, man. I mean, people used to, you know, back in the '80s, they used to like eat hot dogs and smoke cigarettes and drink beer in the halftime. You know, like now it's a way different. The bodies are such peak condition and tip top shape that when you get into a situation like that physically, it could last for a long, long time. Thank you, Hill, again, for the kind donation. We love the way you support the show, man. Thank you so much. Tommy Tom says, hey guys, you think there needs to be less high spots in wrestling? I remember when diving through ropes and the Canadian Destroyer was cool. Yeah, good question, Tommy. What do you think, Aaron? Do we need these spots anymore? Haven't we seen everything we can see, or is there still a thrill with these spots?
Let me put my imaginary Jim Cornette glasses on and say, hell yeah, we need to stop seeing this many high spots. Like, yeah, dude, I remember watching TNA back in the day, and Petey Williams, when he would do the signal the Canadian Destroyer, and then he would do it. I thought the Canadian Destroyer was the coolest move I'd ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. I was like, that is the coolest thing ever that anyone's ever done. And now everybody does it.
Yeah.
And it's so overdone, so overblown. That's just one spot. The other spot that's so overblown is people running from one side of the ropes through the ropes to the outside.
Yeah.
I feel like I see that at least once a match, if not twice, every single match. It's like, dude, not everybody needs to do the same shit. Like,
yeah.
And the things I don't like deathmatch wrestling at all. So if you're like a deathmatch wrestling fan, I'm sorry. This is probably not your podcast, because I don't think either one of us are into it. But it's like, I don't like people, except for my one caveat is Lucha Underground, because I loved when they would do stuff in Lucha Underground.
Yeah, Lucha's great.
And they would do crazy, crazy things. But that's also the culture. Mm-hmm. Of Mexican wrestling in some cases, but it's like watching some guy or girl or whatever be on top of a ladder and then fall through a table that's wrapped in barbed wire, which has light tubes on it, which is this or that. It's like, dude, I don't care about any of that.
Yeah,
and then they just get right back up anyway. So there's like no selling of it. And it's just, I don't get it. I think, and once again, I'll keep my Cornette glasses on. I think moves need to mean more. And better stories need to be told. I think a guy like Darby Allin is the kind of guy that can bridge that gap. I think that he does the crazy coffin drop thing that he does, where he jumps backwards and holds his arms like this, just falls backwards. Right. And it's amazing to watch. But at the same time, he can also tell a story in the ring if he wants to. So you have guys that are hybrids like that. I think Pac, the former Neville, is good at that as well.
Yeah.
So you have some guys that can do it both ways. Let's look at Pentagon Jr. for a second. Pentagon Jr., huge in Lucha Underground, huge in Mexico, in that kind of style. Mm-hmm. Then he comes to AEW, and unfortunately, he's been kind of lost in the shuffle. He's another guy that can do that. Rey Fénix does some absolutely crazy stuff, but he can also tell a grounded story in the ring if he needs to. So as long as you can mix the hybrid of the two, you're okay. But I don't like to see people just doing crazy stuff, just like the days of Jeff Hardy jumping off the Titantron or something like that, or Shane McMahon jumping off the Hell in a Cell. I hate watching that. I don't want to see that anymore.
Right. But I mean, there's so many high spots that are happening in NJPW and other places, Aaron, but those are usually the younger guys, right? Most of the time. I mean, Kenny does still do. He did his stuff for a little while. Now he's at AEW, obviously, but like, I feel like that's a young man's game. And with Hardy like that, I don't think that's something that you need to do as a legend. You know, I don't think it's something you need to do anymore. But, you know, he's an old school wrestling guy, Matt Hardy. So for him, there are different codes, different requirements of himself. And maybe he thinks that's a way of still being like one of the boys. So I don't know, dude. Those are the things you run up against, right? And families are more involved than ever before. Children are more involved than ever before. People's considerations, the health, all that stuff gets factored in way more than it used to be, right? I mean, you never saw Linda or any of Hogan's kids ringside until like the late 90s, early 2000s, where it would start becoming a thing. And Flair too. And so those things that like now they've become integral to the storyline because of social media, because of all this stuff. So it becomes a thing where wrestlers have to factor that in to what they're doing. So yeah, all right. Let's see. And I agree. I don't think we need any more. I'm kind of done with it all. We've seen it all. I mean, you're not going to top Mick Hardy. I mean, Mick Foley. After what he did, I mean, unless you're going to throw yourself off the top of a stadium, I don't see anything you can top. Or even Shane's 75-foot death fall, which could have gone terribly wrong. Still, you know, we've seen what you can do. There's not much else you can do unless you take a pedigree off the top of the cage onto a table. Isn't that just right?
Well, there you have it.
Aaron Entertainment says those stairs at the entrance need to go. What does that mean?
He's talking about the AEW stage, like at Daly's place. They have like it's like a weird carpeted step that's like the same level as the ring. I agree, it needs to go. Because I believe it's only like wood, so it's just like wood covered with carpet.
Oh wow!
They need to level that shit out. Like that's going to cause somebody. Just because nobody's got hurt yet doesn't mean that somebody won't get hurt.
Right.
So yeah, they need to level that off before somebody gets hurt really badly, and then they're going to feel bad for not doing it. I 100% agree with you.
Yeah, fair. John Dawson did a stream lab as well. Thank you, Entertainment, for that super chat. He said, "Hey, missed last week's episode. My thoughts on Peyton Royce is the same as Jeff Hardy, Cedric Alexander, and Chelsea Green. It's because all of the partners work in AEW. They're just trying to lock them down and keep them in the WWE. Do you think that as well?
It's an interesting concept. I'm not sure. Chelsea Green, of course, is with Matt Cardona, aka Zack Ryder. So that she popped into my head because they showed those vignettes on SmackDown of somebody coming new where they just showed the legs.
Right.
And a lot of people were thinking it's her. I think it might be her as well. That's interesting because you would kind of want a happy environment. And I don't know if some of these people that you mentioned are going to be like big, big stars. Like, I don't no offense to Chelsea Green, but I don't see her as a big, big star or anything like that. But to lock them down, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense in a way. So, yeah, I can get down with that.
Okay. Yeah, I got to think so, too. I mean, happy work environment. I don't think Vince cares about any of that anymore. I think Vince knows he's in a bit of a competition. AEW get 1 million views. That's kind of, you know, we'll see if that sustains itself. But I think Vince feels he's in a competition. People leave his organization. They immediately pop up on AEW, and the fans get right behind it. So these are things he's competing with at this point, and it only makes AEW bigger. You know, I liken it a little bit to the MLS and Premier League or other leagues around the country. And for those of you who know football and know soccer, you understand what I'm saying. Sending in their best players at the twilight of their career over to the MLS was the process at the beginning of that league. Now people are coming over at medium parts of their prime, or at least just past their prime, to still ply their wares here in the MLS and then move back on over to Europe. So I'm seeing the same thing here. I think younger wrestlers are being let go of the WWE. Now they're going to AEW to do their thing. The sea change is happening more and more, and I think that's good. You don't want to see old WWE wrestlers showing up at AEW, but you do want to see WWE wrestlers, former WWE wrestlers, that's still in their prime. And certainly one we're going to talk about in a little bit certainly is still that.
I do want to bring up something. I just had it and it's gone.
Okay.
PRL18 asked who got injured using the suicide dive last week. That was Ivar from the Viking Raiders. He got injured doing the suicide dive through the ropes and hurt his foot really bad. He's going to be out for a while. So
Wow.
I know Ivar's a big guy, and he does that a lot. He does, like, the big high-flying moves, and he's, you know, young enough to kind of pull that off.
Yeah.
But he's also, like, a 300-plus pounder jumping through the ropes, so some stuff's going to happen.
Yeah, like, that's not easy.
Like, if I'm doing a suicide dive, I'm probably jumping off of a cliff into some water or something. That's what I call it. Like, I'm not jumping onto a person, that's for sure.
Aaron M. James says, that beatdown by Bailey, loved it. Loved it.
It was such a great, it was such a great swerve, bro, to use Vince Russo terms, because everybody thought that Sasha was going to turn on Bailey, and then ended up being the opposite, and Bailey stayed heel and beat the crap out of Sasha. It was awesome. Big time. Loved it.
Loved it too. Nice swerve. Thanks, Aaron. Entertainment. All right, let's move on to our next thing, Aaron.
Well, show's over. We've been going and talking about the same talk for 30 minutes. Show's over. No, just kidding. So let's talk about the WWE ending third-party deals for superstars. I'm sure you got a lot to say about this.
Yeah.
Allegedly, I'll start with this little tidbit that it was allegedly because of Lana's Bang Energy ads and her TikToks and her Instagrams that was upsetting everybody and in the company brass. So they had to make a statement. I'll read a little bit of it. It says here, much like Disney and Warner Brothers, WWE creates, promotes, and invests in its intellectual property, i.e. the stage names like The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, Roman Reigns, Big E, Braun Strowman. It's the control and exploitation of these characters that allows WWE to drive revenue, which in turn, you know, allows the company to pay performers, blah, blah, blah. It's imperative that the success for our company to protect our greatest assets and establish partnerships with third parties on a company-wide basis rather than on an individual level. So basically, to sum that all up, if you go on like a, Cameo. If you go on Cameo and you want Sasha Banks to say happy birthday to your best friend or your mom or something, you can pay her like $100 and she'll do it. Maybe. And maybe she won't. And then
it might be more.
It might be more. Yes. If you're Alexa Bliss, it's like $400 or something. It's madness. But anyway, or, you know, they have these deals with like people that actually don't like that don't have ring names that are using their actual names, like Chelsea Green. We can bring her up. Like you can't go on Pro Wrestling Tees and buy a Sasha Banks shirt because Sasha Banks is a WWE owned name and it's on WWE shop. But Chelsea Green, that's her real name. She can go on Pro Wrestling Tees and you can buy a Chelsea Green shirt. You don't have to just buy the one from WWE shop. So she's kind of making her own side revenue ahead of the WWE, and they're like not playing with it anymore. Like, bro. Like, Sasha Banks ain't gonna send you a videogram, but Mercedes, her real name, she'll send you one.
Yeah.
So, part of me thinks this is overblown, and then part of me wants me to get like super mad about it. So I don't know how you feel about it.
I'm of two minds about it. I understand when you're a business owner and you've come up with a name. The creative has come up with a name for the wrestler who comes into your company, and you don't want the wrestler getting involved under that name, under that brand name, with something where they're saying something inappropriate or doing something inappropriate, because that leads back to your company. I get that. But if you know that doing Cameo and doing this is how to promote bringing new people in, if you know fans feel a little more connected to your product because these wrestlers are doing these cameos and TikToks and whatever and doing these separate deals for themselves, hey, they're the ones going out there doing the wrestling. They're the ones acting in the storylines. They're the ones putting their body on the line. Yes, you're writing the storyline or you're approving the storyline, but they're the ones implementing it. So I think there is, and they're independent contractors, which means you don't give them health insurance. You don't guarantee them work. You don't do anything but, you know, write stuff out. And if you want to get rid of them at any moment, you can. So these are the things that you have to kind of look at the letter and the language and the legality of the contracts and what's in there and ask yourself, well, what are they allowed to do? What are they not allowed to do? And these wrestlers should have some claim to their names if they're becoming famous, taking what you've written on a piece of paper and bringing it to life in a way that is way better than you may have anticipated or was possible. So there has to be, there's a lot of levels to this that I think have to be negotiated out wrestler per wrestler. I don't think you can make a blanket statement about it overall. I get Vince's concern, but overall, I also think these wrestlers have rights because they're independent contractors. They have no guarantees. So if they can align themselves and get some sponsorship deals for themselves so they can have a little bit of security on the tail end of their lives when the WWE is going to cover them for CTE or any brain injuries, I don't think there's anything wrong with them doing that. So I feel like the WWE is trying to have it both ways. They're trying to have the cake and eat it too. You're an independent contractor, so I save money by not paying you health insurance. But if you're going to make money on the side without me, you need to get that all approved by me, and we need to get a cut of that. So it's just like those are the things they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, and I think that's unfair to the wrestlers who at any moment can be let go by the WWE. You know, I mean, I don't think the NFL does this with that's character situation. I get that, but Andrew Yang responded to this. Do you mind if I read what he said?
Yeah, go ahead.
Former Democratic presidential candidate says the initial story of superstars being banned from using sites like Cameo and Twitch was sent in by someone in the WWE. This is reporting from Pro Wrestling Sheet. Shout out to our boy over there, Ryan Satin. He said, it infuriated me because I know the WWE has been trying to play it both ways for years. Yeah, exactly what I just said, where they're saying on one hand, can't do anything without our say-so. We own you, but you're an independent contractor. We have nothing to do with your health, retirement, any of the benefits you'd get that would accrue an employee. So to me, You have to make a choice at some point. If you're going to control all these aspects of a wrestler or performer's waking life, then you should take some responsibility too for that person's bigger picture. Abso-goddamn-lutely. They are putting their lives on the line, or their health on the line, their family life on the line all the time. They made Vince a billionaire, and then the fact that he's still being so heavy-handed about their ability to make a simple buck on Cameo just struck me as so absurd and ridiculous and wrong. So that is just pretty much an encapsulation of how I feel about this. And then when they compared themselves to the Disney and Warner Brothers, Yang responded, asked if that argument held weight. Andrew Yang said, I really do not feel it holds weight, because there's no doubt in anyone's mind that if an actress or performer plays Belle from Beauty and the Beast, that is not actually Belle. She does not live in a magic castle with the Beast. So if the actress then turns around and does something of their own accord, everyone knows it's talent for hire and she's doing something else. So with professional wrestlers, you inhabit a character, but you're still a human being and you still should be able to do things as any human would do. If you, he's talking to Chris Van Fleet on his podcast, if you, Chris, somehow were in a movie and then all of a sudden you weren't allowed to turn around and do anything for, as yourself. So I think that the comparison is not very apt, in large part because the treatment is so dissonant. Because on one hand, you're saying, look, we have no responsibility for you. But on the other hand, we control your very image, your name in some cases, and you can't do anything without our say so. In a way, it's actually inhuman. It's dehumanizing. It's saying, look, you are no longer a human being. You are this character. I would also go just a little bit further than Andrew and say, not only this character, but we own you. And that is not how things should be. That's not how business should be happening at all. I mean, look at the Schmodown, Aaron. There's no way Christian would stop me from calling it the Outlaw Nation. If I started making Outlaw or the Outlaw Nation merchandise, Christian would not step in and stop me, because he understands that I built that character from what we talked about. I built it out. Me winning allowed me to keep having more matches. Me winning titles allowed me to build this game up and build my legend. And that allows me to make money however I want with that character. Will I also sell shirts that if they come up with any shirts for the Schmoda in the new year? Absolutely. But I also get to create my stuff on the side, because he respects what I built. And I don't think Vince respects anyone at all who's making money on the side to try to stay alive or try to fund their life after wrestling.
It's funny. The one person that I know of that has a third party deal, I don't know if they still do.
Yeah.
And are allowed to advertise it, is Brock Lesnar with the Jack Link's jerky and Jimmy John's and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So CM Punk tried that, got denied. Edge tried that, got denied. So Brock Lesnar seems to be the only guy that can do that. But yeah, I mean, from what I can also tell, though, it's only like using their actual name. So like Paige has a Twitch.
Yeah.
But now it's not Paige WWE Twitch. It's Saraya.
Yeah.
Or so using her actual name. So I think that they can get away with that. So AJ's the phenomenal AJ Styles on Twitch has to go away. But he owns that one. So that's not a good example. But say like Lana WWE goes away and she becomes CJ Perry on Twitch, right. And that's fine. So I guess in a way that's okay. It's just,
but is it Aaron? Because nobody knows them, or not enough people know them as CJ Perry or know them as Saraya. So the WWE once again is having it both ways. You can go on there, but in no way are we going to use your actual name on our show. So people have to work hard to find you. So you, in essence, as the famous performer, have to consistently tweet about your Twitch or post about your Twitch so that people start to gravitate and mentally connect your actual name with your performer name. So I think that's
which is also what you don't want. You don't want that, because you want people to look at like a picture of Paige and go, that's Paige, not, oh, that's Saraya. Or vice versa. And a lot of people don't know wrestlers' real names. Like that's just a real nerdy thing. Like you would say, oh, Jessica McKay and what's her name? Cassie McIntosh. I like them a lot. That's Billy Kay and Peyton Royce. Like,
right.
Now they have to change like all their stuff too. And it's like, what's the point, man? Like just let them. It's not like they're making millions. The only person making millions of dollars on Cameo apparently is Alexa Bliss, because she's charging $400 for a cameo, for God's sake. Knock it off.
It's Alexa Bliss, man. Hey,
come dude. Come on.
It's what do you want me to say? I think it's fair for her to charge that much. It's a capitalist economy. The if the market
you can
the change market says you can charge that much, if people are going to pay it. You know,
yeah, of course, supply and demand. Of course, that always applies. Right. The rule of, you know, if there's a sucker born every minute, also. But it's like, come on, that's crazy. But yeah, I mean, where was that? I don't know. But yeah, I see what you're saying. I see what you mean. I get it all, and it's complete BS. Like, allow your people to make some money on the side. Like, you let Dolph Ziggler go do comedy shows, but he doesn't do it as Dolph Ziggler. He does it as Nick Nemeth. So what? What, where's the stopping point? These wrestlers have podcasts. They do other stuff anyway. So why do you have to stop them from doing Twitch and Cameo? Who gives a damn? Like,
yeah, that's what I wonder at the end of the day. And I wonder if this is like, you know, this feels very much like, you know, once again, Vince doing the whole, I don't know, man, I'm walking the line here a little bit, but it's very reminiscent of what we've seen from other people who run corporations or run countries. And they have to have this like undying loyalty, but they barely have to recognize you. They barely have to, you know, touch you or whatever, but you have to give everything of your life to them. It's fucking ridiculous. And it's sick to see. And I think it takes a sick mind to do that kind of stuff, in my personal opinion. And someone who doesn't care about people, really, not really have that real emotional connection with people. There's a bit of a sociopath nature to that, which I think is, unfortunate. But for some people who have succeeded in life, it's what helps them succeed in life, because they don't feel the emotional burden of firing someone or letting someone go or destroying someone's life or their family. And so they're just like, well, the bottom line is all that matters here. And I think I see, and Vince, of course, the hit on the XFL, the hit on losing stuff on the stock market, man, he's taking some hits financially, and maybe he sees these other wrestlers making money and he's thinking to himself, that's money I'm losing. They're going, doing stuff, and that's money that could be coming into our pockets. You don't get to do that anymore. Because I've never heard him complain about this in the past, but all of a sudden this is an issue. So I don't know.
Well, like we said, it's allegedly from Lana doing her Bang Energy ads all over Instagram and stuff, which really got him up in arms, which, what a surprise. Lana didn't do something, or yeah. Lana did something wrong. What a surprise. not surprised at all. Actually, she's constantly pushing buttons,
yeah,
which doesn't surprise you, which brings us to our next story.
Let's do it.
Guess who is now in All Elite Wrestling? That's right. The former Rusev, Miro. Happy Rusev Day. Happy Miro Day to everybody. He was revealed as Kip Sabian's best man on this past week's AEW Dynamite. A lot of AEW talk today. I like it.
Man, I like it.
Yeah, so he is now a part of All Elite Wrestling going forward. Sites say that it's a multi-year deal and that he will start right away. I mean, he is All Elite. So what do you think, man? I know he's your boy.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, I like Rusev as a wrestler. I like Miro. Really enjoyed the scenes I got to see of him on that Total Divas show. You got to see more of the natural personality of him, you know, and he's great at playing the brutish, hulkish, evil heel. You know, obviously the Bulgaria stuff for so long and all of that, it was great, you know, and Lana with the accent, the disappearing accent, all of it was great. But for some reason, they just kept writing him into a corner and couldn't write him out of the corner. Every single time he started to pop back up again, they just couldn't figure out what to do with him. And also, to be fair, Rusev didn't have memorable matches necessarily, and that can be a difficult thing to kind of accept if you're Rusev, but he certainly was over. I think he's got over 1 million followers on social media. You don't get that. I mean, Zelina Vega is still at 390,000, so you don't get that unless you're fully over with a lot of fans. And so that speaks volumes to the kind of attraction and interest people have in Rusev. And look, he wrote out a number of incidences, as you said, that were maybe questionable. Him and Lana posting their marriage, like all in the middle of a storyline where they're breaking up or whatever was happening there. He's had some missteps to the WWE as well. I like that he gets a fresh start here. This is a younger company. This is a more vibrant company. This is someplace you can slide in and do some damage, you know? And I want to see if they know how to write some better storylines or some extensive storylines for Miro, who that will give him more to do and more to play with and expose his real personality a little bit more. I'd like to see something like that. So I hope they do figure it out for him, because I just love that guy. That's all I can tell you. I love that guy, and I want him to succeed.
I'm sorry. Someone in the chat said they've been watching me for 5 minutes and my face hasn't moved. It makes me. I think they're talking about my stoic.
Stoic demeanor.
I've been studying Allison Camerota and John Berman from CNN's New Day to see how people react when they're split screened. So I've been actually like studying the tape, and they don't move, and it's wild.
Yeah,
it's wild to watch. So I've been studying Billy. That's what I've been doing. But anyway, like I'm happy that Miro's happy. He seems to be happy in All Elite Wrestling. The thing that got Jay Washington and I back and forth and like a little bit of a kerfuffle was I said that he seemed bitter on the mic because he told Vince McMahon to shove his brass ring up his ass. And I just kind of thought, like, we don't need that. Like, dude, you're already gone. You're out of there. You don't need to talk like that anymore. Like, you're happy. You say you're happy. Why do you need to bring Vince back into it? Like, I don't understand it. Like, and that's where Jay was like, well, Vince screwed him over. And, you know, Rusev Day was over like Rover and they never did anything. I'm like, dude, I acknowledge that Rusev Day was over like Rover. And I totally agree that they did some missteps. But why would you keep sounding so bitter and saying that Vince McMahon's brass ring is something you couldn't attain, even if you tried or whatever the hell you were saying? And it's just, you know, I put out a tweet this week also saying that some wrestlers just have ceilings and it's just something we got to deal with. Like,
of course,
we got to learn from that. And like any job, there's just some people and that have a ceiling. You go to a job, you can only go so far, and then you either stay the course and you work that job forever and you go no further and you don't grow, or you go somewhere else and then you grow until you can't grow no more, and then somewhere else and somewhere else. Sometimes people don't get past that first growing step, and that's okay. Sometimes that's just fine. And that's the only point I try to make about Miro, is that, you know, maybe Vince and the company saw something that we didn't, and they thought that he had a ceiling and that he needed to go to a new place to grow. It's not a knock on Miro. It's just maybe the WWE was his ceiling, and now he's got to break out to go somewhere else. And that's just how it works in life. So I don't see what all the big deal is about, you know, me saying that he's bitter. I don't see what the point. I saw a lot of people saying, well, AEW just signs WWE guys anyway. And it's like, okay, so what? Like, WWE signs like 85% of pro wrestlers anyway, so that's going to happen.
But and look, it's free agency, right, Aaron? Once a person is let go from a company, they have a right to go and ply their trade someplace else. And if you want to sign them, especially if you sign someone like Rusev or Miro, who has a lot of years left in his career, I think it's a smart move. This is a guy that's still in his prime, can still wrestle the hell out of a match. And so I think it's a smart move. This isn't them bringing over, like, you know, Randy Savage at the tail end of his career or whatever that WCW did for a little bit. It's not the same thing. And Zack Ryder, still very much in shape, very much has a few years left in his career. Gallows and Anderson, like, all they're not bringing over what's left of Jeff Hardy. They're bringing over people who are currently young and, or at least in their, you know, is still somewhat in their prime and can wrestle a good match and have a name. And so to me, that's a smart move. That's a smart company move. You know, we see it in all sports. People bring over players. Look, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are investing in Tom Brady, who could break his leg in the first game of the NFL season because the old line may not be as strong as he had in New England. Who knows if Bruce Arians can scheme the right thing for him and avoid the pressure. But Tom could get hurt and right off the bat because he's an older player now. So those things are possible, but they brought in a guy for name value, name recognition. This is not that. This is not that. This is the Cardinals getting Hopkins. This is what this is. DeAndre Hopkins over there to help Kyler Murray play a better brand of football. So this is the same thing. They're hoping to expand the kind of wrestling that they can have in AEW. And I like that Miro's down there. But I will say this in a little bit of defense. As someone who was unceremoniously dumped out of a company, I have at times, when the moment is called for it, in my opinion, let them have it in certain moments, in certain conversations, in certain shows, because I don't like the way that happened. I think the owner of that company deserves to get raked over the coals by me, but it doesn't make me bitter. It's just my overdeveloped sense of justice. I thought it was an injustice, and when it pops up, I feel the need to mention. However, Aaron, you're absolutely right. Mention it too much, and it comes off as bitter. So I hope Miro got this out of his system, and now he's on. And, you know, it got said what he said about Vince. and then move on. Because AEW took a shot at Vince in that pay-per-view as well. And then you had the Hardy situation and the Seidel situation. So it kind of got buried, what they were trying to do there, come off as smirky about the whole situation. But, you know, this is something where they mentioned Vince. I think the more they mention him, it means that he's living inside their head. They're not living inside his head. And right. That's the thing that they have to eventually walk away from. And I agree with you, Aaron. You got to walk away from it, because the more you talk about someone else, you're building them up as competition in your mind. You're building them up in a certain way by mentioning them all the time. So hopefully they'll make that switch soon and just start worrying about themselves and building a better product within their stuff, which is what I'm doing in a reference to my example. I'm trying to build a better product with this channel. And so those are the best ways you can get back at a situation or redeem yourself in a situation. So hopefully Miro has that possibility and has that opportunity there at AEW.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to talk about offensive lines, can we talk about Kansas City? My God, I know this is a wrestling show, but my goodness, I'm a former offensive lineman playing football 20 years ago, and I'm watching the Kansas City offensive line, and they are mauling people.
Yeah.
So yeah, Patrick Mahomes he's fine there.
Yeah, Mahomes is totally fine there.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to our next story. A bit of sad news to report. The voice of TNA wrestling, if you remember those. Almost James Earl Jones, like early promos.
Yeah.
Barry Scott passed away at 65 this week. You know, big, big part of the early days of TNA wrestling. That voice is unmistakable.
Yeah.
So your thoughts on him?
I, you know, as a voiceover artist for me, I have always been envious of the people that have gotten to do promos in pro wrestling and extended promos. They're incredible. They're incredible promos. And Barry Scott did such a great job with the promos he did at TNA. I think, you know, one of the reasons I enjoyed some of the TNA stuff was his promos. He's got such a distinct voice. And look, there's not a lot of, black voiceover artists who get to do things like this. And so it's always great when someone does. And I thought Barry's promos were so fantastic because they were epic and yet they were chill. Epic and chill is tough to do. And I love the way Barry did it and the way he built up as things went along. Of course, the production value, the editing, the music, all of that helps, of course. But the central part of it all is Barry's voice getting inside you as you're listening to it and building up the momentum for this battle. And it's incredible to watch. And, in the WWE, some of the great promos, some of the best are even former guys like Freddie Blassie doing his promo. But I can't remember what pay-per-view it was. He did that incredible promo. Maybe it was Judgment Day or something, but it was fantastic. And so when you get those guys that can do those great promos, the old school promos that they used to have, even that guy who did the promos for NWO, the guy who would just kind of repeat, it was great. You've got to find the right voiceover person for all these situations. But to be the central voiceover person for a wrestling promotion is very difficult to attain. And Barry being there for so long and doing the things that he did, there was just a pace and a style that was distinctly, uniquely different from the other promo guys in the other wrestling federations, but still familiar. And so I love that. It's a tight rope of a line to walk as a voiceover artist. And I, send nothing but love and respect to his family and to him, to the memory of Barry Scott, for what he was able to do for the TNA brand.
Yeah. And TNA put up some of his best voiceovers that he had done over the years. So if you go over to the Impact Wrestling Twitter, you can find all those classic promos. They are outstanding. It's kind of like, it's almost like a Morgan Freeman mixed with a James Earl Jones. Like,
yeah,
you got the softness of the Morgan Freeman with like the hard bravado.
That's a great point.
James Earl Jones. It's very good. And for a while I thought it was James Earl Jones. I was like, oh God, they got James Earl Jones to do this. But no, it's Barry Scott. So, you know, right. Rest in peace, man. Appreciate it.
His impact. Yeah. It would have been nice to see him, James Earl Jones do those things. Yeah. Let's see if we got any more Streamlabs. Or we haven't had any Streamlabs or Super Chats for the last 20 minutes. What's going on, guys? Is something we're doing wrong? What's the situation here? Send in some
stuff. Do I need to take my shirt off? What's going on?
Aaron, need to take your shirt off and flex it up in this thing? Come on, guys. Send in some stuff. Keep us supported here on the show. Thank you so much. All right. Have we reached that point in the show where we're revisiting our classic match here, my man?
It's that time. Let's hit it with a V-trigger and let's talk about it, because there's a lot of those in this match. excuse me. We're talking about Kenny Omega versus Kazuchika Okada, number 4 from Dominion 2018. 2 out of 3 falls, no time limit. the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. A lot of stuff going on there. But let's go ahead and start with the lead here. In 2016, Kenny Omega won the G1 Climax, getting him a shot at Okada's IWGP Championship at Wrestle Kingdom 11. Okada was victorious. At Dominion in 2017, Okada and Omega would go one-on-one again. This time, the match ended in a 60-minute draw. Okada would defeat Tanahashi at Wrestling Dontaku, and then, Okada would name Omega the next challenger for his title at Dominion 2018. So we go into this match. It's 1-1-1. So everybody's got to win over each other, got a draw. So it's kind of like a classic soccer match, if you will, or a football match. 1-1-1. And this, man, like, it's just a different animal. Like, it's not Wrestle Kingdom, so it's not like the big WrestleMania type of show. But Dominion, the way that Kenny Omega and Okada do their entrances here, whoa. Like, yeah. you know this is big time even when we start.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you can tell that there's weight to what they're going to be bringing, and the audience is completely 1,000% behind it. And the way they kind of like just kind of grapple it up from the beginning, man, the anger, the frustration, the desire all through it from the beginning to get these 2 out of 3 falls for themselves. Great acting overall right off the bat, you know, and the way they just kind of size each other up before they start, kind of like is that sense of respect. And then they just get into it, man. It's so many fantastic moves are in this thing. I don't think it's a technically perfect, 100% perfect match. There are some slips, some changes or what have you, but like an hour long match, Aaron, 2 out of 3 falls. That is a difficult thing to navigate for two wrestlers like this, which so much can go wrong with a lot of their high fly moves, power moves, and the spots they were doing inside and outside the ring.
Yeah, a lot of the same moves too, which which normally would make me just roll my eyes. But you know, Kenny Omega hits that V trigger, that running knee, and it's so good, and he does it so many different ways. And Okada hits these drop kicks, which are a nice intermediate break. There's one point where Kenny Omega gets thrown to the outside and Okada goes for a dive over a guardrail and Omega just knees him in the chest. Yeah. Like, but it's just, oh my God, it's just so good the way that they did it. And I mean, we're talking about Omega and his ability. Like, I haven't watched so much of Kenny Omega that I know everything about him, but this is one of the matches that makes me kind of give pause. Like, he's so good in this. And then I go watch him on AEW Dynamite and I'm like, this isn't the same guy yet. Yeah. Like, it's just not quite like he's not, but maybe he'll get there when he does this cleaner thing again. Maybe he'll get to that point, but just like the charisma and all that, it's just not there yet. Like, I feel like he's kind of being a goof, dare I say, in AEW, but we're not talking about that right now. But you know, Omega jumps from the top rope on the inside to the outside across a guardrail onto Okada, which was insane. Don Callis, I watched both the Japanese commentary and the one with the American commentary.
Oh, nice.
And Don Callis in the American commentary just goes, I don't know what the hell that was, but I'm glad he didn't kill himself. So it was really good. I mean, just so good. And then you know, Okada hits a friggin' tombstone on the apron and only gets a 2 count. Oh my God. And then Okada catches Omega with a roll up for the first fall. But like, that's one fall and you're sitting here trying to catch your breath.
Yeah.
It's just, oh God, dude. Like, I nonstop action here.
The first fall comes 29 minutes into the match. 29 minutes for the first fall. So you're just like, oh my God, how much more is there to go? You know, so, but that's another reason why this match is actually excellent, because that does make sense when you're choreographing this, this long of a match, because obviously you're more exhausted, you're more tired. So the falls are going to come quicker. So you can take more time to showcase what both Okada and Omega can do here in the first 29 minutes. And look, that Randy Orton DDT off the guardrail onto the floor. Good God almighty, man. That is brutal, absolutely brutal. And so much of what goes on outside the ring is just as much of a joy to watch as it is inside the ring. You mentioned the top rope jump from Kenny, but also the stuff that Okada was doing there to kind of keep Kenny outside the ring, and some of the brutal moves that he was doing to keep Kenny kind of from coming back into the ring, I thought was just just insane. Kenny's running two knees on him near the end of the match as well, when Okada is just like laying against the bottom rope. My God, man, from the angle that they have it in, it's amazing that his head just doesn't fall off of his body or fly off of his body, because Kenny is coming with such force. And that's the joy of this match. This is only 2 year old. This match is only 2 years old, but Kenny is in tip top shape here, speed wise, moves wise, and choreography wise throughout the match. It's a joy to watch. And if you, like Aaron said, if you've been watching Kenny in AEW and you're like, what's the big deal? You've got to go back and watch these matches and truly enjoy what Kenny Omega can do. He's incredible in NJPW.
Yeah, he's absolutely outstanding. This is why, for the longest time, Kenny Omega was thought and said to be the best wrestler in the world, which I still think it's AJ Styles, but that's just me. I mean, there at one point, he lays the table across Okada and does a double stomp onto the table with on top of Okada, and it's wild. But then Omega gets the second fall with the one-winged angel. And about this time, both these guys are so spent, they're just like basically leaning on each other. And then out of nowhere, Okada hits the Rainmaker clothesline and Omega does a backflip. He hits him so hard. It was so good. Only getting a two count. And then, you know, Okada goes to the Rainmaker again and he's so tired. He can't put enough force. He grabs it and can't put enough force to put Kenny down. And then Kenny runs and does a one winged angel, kicks out of that. And it's like, man, this is wild. And then he does that running V trigger. You're talking about that running V trigger in the corner. And that sets up Kenny to hit the one winged angel and finally win it. Yeah. And Kenny Omega becomes the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion by beating Okada. Damn.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what's fun to watch in this match too, is like the first half an hour of the match before the first fall, there are some strong moves, some power moves, hard moves, you know, tough moves, but it's technical. There's a lot of technicality in the first half an hour of the match. Once you get into the second half an hour of the match, which is both those falls, the speed and the ferocity of the moves intensifies, and the frequency of the high flying moves intensifies as well in these 15-minute blocks. You know, and then they start to really kind of play with the crowd and connect to the crowd, and the crowd gets more intense as it goes along. So it's a completely different half an hour from the first half an hour you just watched. That's what makes this match so much fun to enjoy and to savor, because you're watching almost two different matches in one, and it's awesome. I mean, it's just absolutely awesome. And, you know, when these NJPW matches come up, I always look forward to seeing, because I'm not as familiar with NJPW. So getting to watch these guys, and I don't need to know much. I don't need to know much about these guys beforehand. I just know Aaron Turner says a good match. All right, let's watch this thing. Let's have some fun. And when you do and see the just the talent and the creativity of these guys and the willingness to put themselves through the things that they put themselves through, you just can't help but feel nothing but 1,000% of respect for both of these athletes in this match as you watch it.
Well, 9 times out of 10, if Aaron Turner says it's a good match, you just roll with it. I like that. I like that. But let's talk about the aftermath of it. Omega would have a short title reign as IWGP champion, losing to Jay White at New Beginning. And then Omega would depart of NJPW for AEW in 2019, of course, and that's where he is right now. A lot of people weren't sure if he was going to stay in New Japan, where he'd been this big star. Is he going to go to WWE and test the waters, or is he going to go with his friends in NJPW and then end up with his friends in AEW? And then Okada would go on to defeat Jay White to win his 5th IWGP championship, and then would go on to defend it against the likes of Chris Jericho and Kota Ibushi. So,
yeah.
Okada still doing his thing, man.
It's amazing how these there's so many great Japanese wrestlers and they never come over here, dude. And people have to work hard to find their work over there. And their work is
killer.
Yeah, I don't want to get in trouble, but I would say their work is better than anything we're seeing stateside. Right. I mean, I may be off base when I say that, but I believe that when I see those matches, they're allowed to do things that people in the WWE and AEW and other federations, Impact, whatever, aren't allowed to do at the level that they're allowed to do them. And I love to watch that on AJPW.
I know what you mean. I know what you're saying. Yeah. Like I look at something as pure and crazy as Lucha Underground, I'm like, man, this is like, no one's doing this stuff. and it's just so entertaining. And I look at NJPW the same way. It's so entertaining. There's not a lot of BS. There's not a lot of, you know, back and forth. No filler, like all killer, no filler. It's just, it's all good, man. And I agree with you there, but I haven't watched enough New Japan or any Japan, enough Japanese wrestling to make that assertion that it's better than stateside. I don't know. That's a battle that could be raged forever and ever. It's really just whatever your taste is, is going to be better. So
I feel like Kenny Omega is the new AJ Styles. And by that, I mean, AJ for years fought in the, in the independent federations and in the slightly lower federations behind the WWE. And then eventually he got to the WWE. And when he got to the WWE, Kenny Omega kind of slid into that spot of like the greatest independent wrestler that hasn't been signed by the WWE. And so he is legend, but AEW is not letting him do his thing. And you get frustrated because, like, why would you sign him and not let him do his thing? You know what I'm saying? It's just frustrating.
I did see Manny Gonzalez mentioned in the chat some of his favorite Japanese wrestlers. And I kind of, like, when I was a kid, I remember watching WCW, and I would watch The Great Muta. I knew who The Great Muta was. I knew who Jushin Thunder Liger was. You know, I knew who these people were. And they were awesome. And one of my favorite wrestlers of all time is the Ultimo Dragon. Like, if we had the top 10, like we're talking last episode, do a top 10 show of top 10 wrestlers, our favorites, Ultimo Dragon is on my list. Wow. Spoiler alert, like, just how good that he was. Like, now that I think of it, like, all those wrestlers from when I was a kid were pretty awesome. So it does surprise me that we're having this discussion right now. But
as much as I love Ray, I'll take Ultimo Dragon over Ray. In a heartbeat. And I know people love Ray and they think Ray's the greatest.
That's a tough call.
But I would take Ultimo Dragon over Ray. I think his athleticism is better than Ray's. Ray's a legend. Ray is a legend. But Ultimo has that little bit extra. And it's the difference between like a mainstream pop wrestler and a wrestler with this like kind of just status that's above that. It's an artistic wrestler. And I think Ultimo is an artistic wrestler that is incredible to watch. Whereas Ray is a pop wrestler. You're going to get the 619. You're going to get the moves. He's going to fight a hell of a match. But the creativity and the ingenuity that you find in his matches versus Ultimo's doesn't compare. Ultimo's is just better. And so it depends on what your criteria is for best wrestlers. I know Ryan Satin puts Ray, I think, in his top 10. If I remember correctly, please don't get mad at me, Ryan. But I do not. You know, and I love Ray, but I don't think he's top 10. I would put Ultimo over Ray in any list that I'm creating.
Well, Ray Mysterio doesn't have a moonsault named after him like the Ultimo Dragon. His real name, Yoshihiro Asai, has the Asai moonsault named after him. So stuck on that, Ray Mysterio. No, I think in
we
terms
love you, of Ray, we love you, Ray. We're just
in terms of WCW wrestlers, I think Rey Mysterio is like number five, top five WCW wrestlers of all time. I would put him ahead of Ultimo Dragon in WCW. I really would. Okay. But yeah, I think Rey Mysterio is on that. There was a thing going around this week. It's like, what are your top five WCW wrestlers of all time? I don't know why that was a thing, but you know, I had Rey Mysterio, Booker T, Hollywood Hogan, Ric Flair, and
Sting.
It's Sting. It was Ric Flair, Sting, Hulk Hogan, Rey Mysterio, and whoever else I said.
Yeah.
Booker T. Yeah. So that was my top five WCW wrestlers. But I don't know. For some reason, that was a list going around. But you know what? I forgot about Diamond Dallas Page, but that's okay. I'd put him in number six or seven.
Yeah. Can we dangerously talk about where you would put Benoit? Would you put him on your list? Is he better in WCW or WWE?
I think he's better in WWE. He'd be in my top 15, I think. I think he would. I'd put Eddie Guerrero ahead of him for sure.
In
WCW, of course. I'd put Ultimate Dragon in front. Yeah, I mean, top 15 to 20. Where's Jericho's in that top 15 to 20 as well. All right. But it's just those top guys. Like, you know, you have to put Goldberg in there at some point. Even I would put Goldberg in.
Oh, no.
I mean, I would have to, right?
Not one legendary match. Not one. But the one we saw last week, though, was great. The Steiner one was damn good.
Yeah, it's good.
Not legendary, but certainly damn good. Let's see. We got some Streamlabs. If you have some time, Aaron, real quick.
I'm sure. I'm not doing shit. Yeah. Okay.
John Doe says, October 14th or 7th, can't remember, Moxley versus Lance for the anniversary show, which will probably be huge. So let's have some fun NXT. NXT will counter program with I Say Halloween Havoc. My friend says Armageddon. What do you think?
I don't know what they're saving Halloween Havoc for, but they need to use Halloween Havoc. That is so cool. Such a cool thing. And if they're going to do it and they do it in NXT, it'll be, people will lose their effing mind if they do Halloween Havoc. That would be amazing if they had, like, you know, because Finn Balor won the NXT championship this past week. Right. So what if they had the Demon Finn Balor at Halloween Havoc?
No.
That would be amazing. I would love to see that. Yeah, let's see that. That'd be great.
Oh, man, that NXT championship is starting to lose any luster.
You better stop. You better stop talking.
It's being changed hands all over the place now, man.
Well, Karrion Kross got hurt. What are you supposed to do?
That's true.
What are you supposed to do with it?
John Doe donated again. He said, Elite recognize Elite Miro. Elite recognize Malik, Miro said on his YouTube. Sorry, let me say that again. Elite recognize Elite Miro said on his YouTube that the shot to Vince was a one-time thing and it will never happen again. Also, where do you see him? What do you see him doing in AEW? Because I believe Kenny beat Moxley. I believe Kenny beats Moxley. Paige beats him. FTR versus Bucks. Cody versus Brody. Then Cody versus Darby. Do you think that's what they're setting up?
We've seen Cody and Darby so many times already in the short history of AEW. I don't know if that's what you want to do. For Miro, I could see him being world champion. Yeah. I don't think he'll unseat John Moxley. I think you're right. I think that will be Kenny Omega who does it. And I don't see Hangman Page beating Kenny Omega for that title for at least a year. I think they're going to let Kenny run with it for a little bit. As far as the TNT title goes, you got Brody and Cody. They got to have that rematch. It depends on what they want to do with the Dark Order. If they want to go ahead and bury the Dark Order, they could do that. And have Brody lose it. But I liked what they were doing. They were setting up Dark Order versus Cody and his friends. I like that kind of idea. Like maybe because a few months ago, they were going to do their own war games called Blood and Guts. So maybe they're going to do that with the Dark Order and like Cody, Matt Cardona, Scorpio Sky, and Dustin and QT Marshall. Maybe they'll do something like that. But I don't know. We'll see.
I like that idea. All right, Grimash sending us one last super chat. It says, this reminds me, top 10 wrestlers coming soon. Yeah, Aaron, we're going to have to maybe
Grimash keeps sending in money, so I guess we're going to have to do it. And I'm pretty sure he bought a t-shirt, too. So, I mean, we're just going to have to bite the bullet and do it. I don't know. Guys, it's got to be a special episode. It can't just be like a normal thing. Like, we've got to pre-record this. We've got to jazz it up. I don't know. Maybe Matt Notes can show up as a cameo. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
We get Ryan if we could ever convince him to do something.
I don't. That's contractual. He's told me that as well. It's contractual. Does Matt know like wrestling at all?
He likes the old school wrestling. He can talk old school wrestling. It might be fun to have him record a separate video that we play on our our feed. So he doesn't have to come in live if he doesn't have time to do it. Now we can ask him to record a quick 5-minute video. That would be hilarious. So I'm down with that. Get Makuga and Alice.
See,
I told you, Haskell's a shit stirrer. Haskell is a shit stirrer. He loves to stir shit. He loves to be at the center of it, the focal end, which is why I don't respond to his tweets. You shouldn't have either.
Haskell.
Don't respond to Haskell's tweets. Respect that he tweets all our shit out, and I totally love him for it, but I never respond to his tweets because he's looking to stir up shit and create drama. And I respect him. I'm just not one of those people who likes to do that anymore.
Can I tell you about the first time I ever met Mark Ellis?
Sure.
Real quick. So we're there for Star Wars Celebration in Orlando. So it was like, the week before that was WrestleMania. So we went to WrestleMania and I'm sitting there and I'm talking to Mark and Christian and Cobster and David Griffin. Yeah. And Mark Ellis was asking me, he's like, oh, you went to WrestleMania, right? I said, yeah. He goes, how many people were there? I was like, 73,000, I think is how many people were there. And he goes, he looks at me deadpan and goes, 73,000 people went to watch like pro staged wrestling. That's something. I was just like, is he burying pro wrestling the first time that he meets me? But
oh yeah, he loves to do that stuff, man.
It's amazing. But he's been nothing but great to me ever since. But I'm just like, that first time, I wasn't sure about him. What's going on here?
That's standard Ellis. I love it. If you know, people pay. If 73,000 people have seen people tell jokes, I mean, you know, it's all a matter of
if you're Kevin Hart.
Yeah, right. It's no matter what your taste is or what your interest is, you know? Yeah, no, you're a shit stirrer, but you're a shit stirrer. I don't care what you say. You're a shit stirrer. You can defend it all you want. You're a shit stirrer. That's why you tag the people you do when you make controversial tweets, because you're looking to start some shit. That's what literally the definition of a shit stirrer is. But I still love you, Haskell.
I love you too, Haskell.
All right. Thanks so much for watching this live episode of Strong Style. Really appreciate everybody who sent in the super chats and Streamlabs today. You know, we live and die by the support you show all the shows we do here on the Outlaw Nation. So thank you so much. Don't forget to hit a like on this video as you're watching it. All the likes you can give it, you know, like the hundreds or 600, 700, 800,000 of you that watch. I would love it if each one of you, when you watch this video and you hear me talking about this, move that cursor button, move that mouse over there and hit the thumbs up button. Give it some love. Also leave a comment. You know, a lot of you can't watch live, but you do watch later. So when you do, leave a comment down below. The more comments you leave, the more likes you leave, it elevates the visibility of the show and visibility of the channel, and maybe puts it on the side for people who watch wrestling shows on YouTube to take a chance on Strong Style and have fun with us. So Aaron, where can people find you and everything you got going on, my brother?
You can find me on Twitter at Only Aaron Turner. Next week, Cody Rhodes versus Dustin Rhodes, Double or Nothing 2019. That's what we're going to be talking about. Brother versus brother, talking more AEW. You guys wanted more AEW. We're talking more AEW, going to war again next week. So check it out.
Love it. Bring your buckets to wipe up the blood. That's for damn sure. It was a hell of a match.
Bring your bucket and your mop.
In your mop.
I believe it's the words to a song that's popular these days. So bring your bucket and your mop.
Bring your bucket and your mop. I remember watching that one in a hotel room after my girlfriend went to go see her family, and I just was loving the hell out of this match. So I can't wait for us to talk about and revisit it as well.
I thought you were going to say the WAP video. I was like, what? I was just loving it.
No, I did tell my girlfriend about it. She was like, nope, I don't need to know anything about that. So thank you all so much. You can follow me at The Roca Says on Twitter and on Instagram. I've got so much going on. And I think Aaron and I are going to start talking about possibly doing some more content here for Strong Style. You know, I'd love to get more things going on, get more people behind it. So maybe talking about more, maybe doing some recaps of some shows and what have you. Maybe this is the next step we're taking in Strong Style. And maybe, just maybe, we'll move Strong Style over to its own YouTube channel so Aaron and I can start putting up more content when Aaron can get to stuff while he's down there in Orlando. Aaron can do his own videos. I can do my own videos, and then we come together and do recaps and what have you. So I'm not out of the pro wrestling game at all. I want to just do more to attract more fans distinctly to this channel and to the stuff we're offering. So look for that possibility down the road for sure. A lot of changes coming in both our lives and then maybe both and then also possibly the Outlaw Nation as well. All right. Thanks all so much for following us and watching us today. And we will talk to you next time on another live episode of Strong Style. Have yourself an awesome weekend. Take care of yourself. Wear your mask. Be safe. And come back and see us next Friday for another live episode of Strong Style.
Drink Gatorade.